right, salute. All right, so it's early. I might have to end early. This week is Seder of Shemos. And of course, Shemos talks about how the situation of the Jewish people in Egypt turns 180 degrees. Originally, they were Karav L'Malchus. They were looked on with a favorable attitude by Paro and his ministers. Yosef gave esteem and respect to the Jewish people by saving the lives of Egypt. And all of a sudden, a new king arises on Egypt, and there are decrees against the Jewish people. The Jewish people are enslaved through trickery. And the situation changes. And not only that, but Paro issues decrees to kill the male children who are born to the Jewish women. And Moshe was born to Yocheved. Yocheved successfully hid him for 3 months, but after 3 months, she wasn't able to hide him any longer, and he was put in a basket, and the basket flowed. The basket flowed on the Yor, in the river. And Miriam, of course, stands by the side, keeping a watchful eye on the basket that Moshe is in. And the daughter of Paro, Basha, all of a sudden, the way the Torah presents it, Vaterid Bas Paro Lirchotz Aliyor, she goes down to wash herself Al Hayor, on the Yor. Vinarsah and her maidservants go with her, and they see this basket, and the daughter of Paro opens the basket, and she sees a baby crying, and she has feelings of mercy for the baby, and she says this is obviously one of the Jewish children. And she hires Yocheved to feed the baby for her. And eventually the baby comes, Yocheved returns Moshe to her. And Moshe becomes to a certain degree like the son of Bas Paro of Basha. But there's a very interesting medrash. The medrash says, "Vatayrid bas Paro lirchotz aliyor," that the daughter of Paro goes to wash herself on the Yor. So the medrash says, "Megigule aviha," from the idolatry of her father. And the way this medrash is understood, that's it's almost explicit that she went through a process of conversion. Now, there is a whole discussion as to whether the Avos, the patriarchs, had Dushas Yisrael or didn't have Dushas Yisrael, whether they had the sanctity of being a Jew or they didn't have the sanctity of being Jewish. In other words, at what point are the descendants, is Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and their descendants considered to be Jewish? And there are those that suggest that they only become really Jewish at the time of the giving of the Torah. However, I think the predominant opinion, certainly the most logical opinion, is that from the time Avram Avinu went through Bris Milah, received the commandment of circumcision, so the Avos, even the patriarchs, were considered Jewish. And the Briska Rav follows that opinion, and he it's reported that he brought a number of proofs for it. But one of the proofs that he brought was right here from this Medrash. The Medrash says that Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, went through conversion. She went to the Yor in order to wash herself, Megigule Aviha, in order to change her religion, to become Jewish. And the Brisker Rav asked the question, how do we see in this Parsha that Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, underwent conversion? If you read the words very simply, are just saying that she went to wash herself, take a bath, whatever it might be. Lirchotz Aliyor. How do we know that the Lirchotz Aliyor, to wash herself on the Yor, was in order that it was really a form of conversion? It was like going to a mikveh. How do we see that from the pasuk, from the verses of the Torah? And the Brisker Rav says something probably was somewhat indicative of the feelings that the Jews in Europe at that time had. He says, because we see the Rachmanis, we see the mercy that she had for Moshe, for the baby that was Moshe. And he implies that that type of mercy has to be associated with her becoming Jewish. Now, I always had trouble with this thought. And there are many reasons why I had trouble with what the Brisker Rav said. Now, the truth of the matter is, though, and this does work with the Brisker Rav, but it does not, it's not, on the basis of this Medrash, it's what the Brisker Rav said is not necessarily compelling. Our sages tell us that there are three traits that are associated with the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomle Chasadim. Being merciful, being modest, and doing kindness. So the Brisker Rav understood that somehow these actions emanate from someone being Jewish. And he applies it to over here. But a strange thing comes out if we follow this logic completely. In other words, up to the moment that Basia, the daughter of Paro, underwent conversion, so she wasn't as much of a Rachman. She wasn't so merciful. But the moment she raised her head out of the water, then she became merciful. While it's true, there is an inyan of Kabbalah's mitzvos, of accepting the mitzvos. And up till the moment, even that there is a question, but up to the moment that one goes through conversion, so he does not, that person does not have to adhere to the laws of the Torah that are incumbent upon a Jew. But the moment he comes out of the mikveh, the moment he sticks his head out of the water of the mikveh, he is obligated in all the mitzvahs of the Torah like any Jew, any member of the Jewish faith. But here we're not talking about regular mitzvahs. We are talking here about character traits. Character traits, under the best of circumstances, cannot be acquired in one moment. maybe there could be some kind of shock therapy, I don't know. But character traits cannot be acquired in one moment under normal circumstances. And while it is important for someone who undergoes conversion to have the proper character traits, I remember hearing from somebody that the Chazon Ish said that a Beis Din that is evaluating a person for conversion not only has to evaluate his commitment to observe the mitzvos of the Torah, but he also has to evaluate his midos. He has to evaluate his character traits. And while I do not believe that the dipping yourself in the mikvah will automatically change one's character traits, having the proper character traits should certainly be a prerequisite of determining whether someone should undergo conversion or not. So, to me, it seems that it was not the Geirus that caused Basya to be a Rachman, to have mercy, but perhaps it's just the reverse. It's because she had the character traits that were associated with being Jewish. It was that type of attitude that led her to adopt the Jewish faith. It was that type of attitude that led her to reject the faith of her father, who was enslaving and murdering the Jewish people. But the question we have to understand is, nevertheless, we have to answer, even though if we suggest that the Briska Rav's Teretz, it's not necessarily the only possibility of understanding how our sages knew that Basya went through conversion, we have to understand what alternative explanations there could be, because the Pasuk doesn't mention it explicitly. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you look at the Baal HaTurim, the Baal HaTurim says that when the Torah introduces us to Basya, the daughter of Paro, the Torah says, "Vatered bas Paro lirchotz aliyor." Vatered went down, bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, to wash or to go into the yor. Now, the expression "Vatered bas Paro," so the last letters of the first three words, "Vatered bas Paro," the last letter of "Vatered" going down is a dalet. Bas, daughter of, is a suf, and Paro is a hey. If you take those three letters together, it spells out the word dosa, her religion. So in a sense, this is one of the ways our sages understand psukim, is through drushos. But Tered Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, went down lirchotz, to wash herself from dasa, from her religion, from her previous religion, to adapt a new religion. That's how the Baal HaTurim understands it. I would suggest, and it could be the Baal HaTurim understood it that way also. In other words, it's not relevant to us that Bas Paro went down to the Yor, to the Nile River. It's not relevant to us. It's just relevant to us that she was in the Yor. She was by the Yor, or by the Yor, and she spotted the basket that Moshe was in. So why does the Torah tell us that Tered Bas Paro, that the daughter of Paro went down? Obviously, she went down with a special intention. It would be enough to say she was in the Yor. She was washing herself in the Yor. Why does it have to say by Tered? She went down to the Yor. She was in the Yor. She was by the Yor. So in other words, it was for a special purpose that she went down. And because of that, we take the Baal HaTorim's drasha of Dasa. She went down to change her religion. But it's more than just that. When you take a look at the whole part, at these few psukim, three, four psukim, without the drushos, if you take this simple explanation of the pasuk, on the contrary, from this perspective, it's better without the drushos. It's not only that she saves Moshe, but she saves Moshe because he's a Jew. And not only that, she seems to want Moshe to be brought up as a Jew. She immediately agrees with Miriam. I know the drushes, but I'm talking the simple reading of the Chumash. She immediately agrees with Miriam. Yes, get a Jewish woman to feed him, to take care of him, to nurture him. And after that, Moshe comes to the palace, lives with her as her son. If it was just a matter of saving his life, Moshe did not have to come after she arranged for him to have a Jewish religious upbringing. She did not have to have him as her son. The very fact that she took this Jewish child and adopted him as her son was indicative of the fact that she herself became Jewish. The fact that the Torah emphasizes these points. And I think, and this is in general, very often when the Torah emphasizes, goes into details, it's to let us know something. Now, in Parshas Chayesara, for example, Abraham negotiates with the Bnei Ches, with Ephron, to buy the Maris Machpelah as a burial place for Sarah, and ultimately a burial place for him, for Yitzchak and Rivka, for Yaakov and Leah. And the Ibn Ezra asks, why is it necessary for the Torah to go into this? And the Ibn Ezra gives two answers, but one answer he gave is to emphasize how important the significance of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, is for those who are living there, residing there, as well as for those who are dead, who passed away already. And the Ramban almost jumps on Ibn Ezra. He says, if she had died in Egypt or in another country, and if Sarah had died in Egypt or another country, and he would have been moved to Eretz Yisrael, and Sarah's body would have been moved to Eretz Yisrael for burial, that would show us that Eretz Yisrael is significant, not only for the living, but for the dead as well. But Sarah died in Eretz Yisrael. So how do we see, by the fact that Avram went and bought a burial lot for her, that Eretz Yisrael is significant for the living and for the dead? So I think the answer is very obvious. The answer is, it's not the action of Avram that's indicative of the fact that Eretz Yisrael is significant for the dead. Because the Ramban is right. She died in Eretz Yisrael. That would have been the normal thing to do. But it's the fact that the Torah devotes so much space to it that makes it significant. And I think here too, the Torah is emphasizing, telling us that, first of all, the daughter of Paro, all of a sudden, she has mercy on Moshe. And why does she have mercy on Moshe? The pasuk says, it wasn't that she saw a fondling. It's one of the Jewish children. And then she agrees to hire a Jewish lady who was from the group that her father Paro said they're a fifth column in Egypt. They're going to join with our enemies to destroy us. And then the Torah tells us, and she takes, and Batikras Emayelet, it's not clear from the simple reading whether she knew Yocheved was the biological or genetic mother of Moshe or not, but it could be she did know. And then she says, Vayihilo Levain, and she took him as a son. And what's even more interesting is Batikra Shmo Moshe, Batomer Kiminamayim Ishistihu. She called him Moshe, and she said, because I took him from the waters. That's why she gave him the name Moshe. She was announcing that it really wasn't her biological child. It was someone that she took out of the Nile River. So on one hand, it's Vayihi Lo Levain. It's a son for her. On the other hand, she leaves it open. Maybe he is a Jewish child. Who do you find in the Mayim in those days that wasn't Jewish? Okay, there is a Medrash that says that on a particular day, Paro wanted all children born in Egypt to it happened to be the day that Moshe was born, to be drowned. But this was 3 months. They didn't really know that Moshe was born at that day. This was 3 months after Moshe was born. So in a sense, she was publicly declaring that he might be Jewish. She didn't make an announcement that he's Jewish. And the Medrash tells us that people were saying that. Some of Paro's officers, advisors, were telling Paro he's Jewish. But Paro refused to accept it because Paro saw him as the son of his daughter. Now, in general, here there is, by the way, a lesson. There is a question that was recently asked about adoption in general. Many years ago, it had to do with this week's Sedra. Many years ago, it was probably in the late 50s. It was a Din Torah. My father, at that time, my father was young, but he was the Dayan at the Din Torah. Both sides accepted him, at least initially, to the Din Torah. There was an elderly couple that didn't have any children. And they adopted a son. A boy who was born from a Hasidic family, a very poor family. And there was some exchange of money in the process. Maybe there wasn't, but my impression is that there was. But the genetic parents, they did not have much money. They had many children. Maybe it was just that they simply couldn't afford it. And they thought it was in the child's best interest. But the adopting parents were very nice people. And they allowed, almost like Basia, they allowed him to have a relationship with his real parents. And you see, that's the story with Moshe also. I mean, V'yetzei Lechav, it was his brothers. The Jewish people were his brothers. So he knew who he was. Apparently there was a continuing relationship of some sort. Might not have been known to Paro. And all of a sudden, they allowed him to have a relationship. They encouraged him to have a relationship with his real parents. But then the boy eventually grew up. He became a student in Lakewood Yeshiva. He was a Talmud of Rabban Kotler Zatzal. And the question came up, who should walk him down to the chuppah? And at that time, the Din Torah was my father Paskin at that time, that the adopting parents should walk him down to the chuppah. And my father wasn't just something that my father felt, but he based it on sources. The Medrash in this week's Sedra tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu, before he returned to Egypt to confront Paro and to challenge Paro to let the Jewish people leave Egypt and to become free, he told HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I have to go get permission from Yisro. And the Medrash says, why did he have to get permission from Yisro? After all, his father Amram, his genetic father, was in Egypt from the perspective of Tibur Av. He should have gone to Egypt right away. And the Medrash says, we see from here that if somebody took you into their house and they fed you and they've got you clothes and they took care of you, you're required to show them more respect than you are then to your actual parents. My father on that basis paskined that the adopting parents, the ones who took him up, took care of him, who brought him up, who sent him to school, who took care of all his needs, they should walk him down to the chuppah. And at that time, the genetic parents, biological parents, who had a relationship with him, they were very upset with the psak. And at that time, my father said, your son is a student, a Talmud, of Rav Aaron Kotler. Let your son go to Rav Aaron Kotler and tell him the psak that I gave, and let him mention what the reason for the psak is. And whatever Rav Aaron Kotler will say will follow. And that's what happened, and Rav Aaron Kotler agreed. So it's an inyan, a sense of hakaras hatov, of recognizing what was done for you. There is a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. But sometimes you owe something to people more than your parents. Now, that's not usually the case. Because the parents, we very often take for granted what they do for us. But when we're dealing with an adoption situation, and the adopting parents are the ones who took care of everything, you don't have to worry that we are not giving enough shivas importance to what the actual parents did. Because you were brought up by other parents. So in an adoption situation, there is an inyan of hakaras hatov, of showing appreciation and recognition for what they did for you. And in a sense, the relationship could be, now, there are many that speak very much against the idea of actual adoption. But I think when they spoke against the feeling of actual adoption, it wasn't that you shouldn't take a yosom besok beso, you shouldn't take an orphan into the house. There is a special mitzvah. Our sages say that if someone who takes an orphan into the house, a kili yoldo, it's like he gave birth to him. And now it's in a certain sense. We have in Torah, we says, regarding the mitzvah limud Torah, we have this idea you shall teach your children. B'neichem elu talmidechem. Who is your b'neichem? That's your, who is your children? Your students. In other words, what's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is that a teacher has to have a parental approach. A teacher has to have a parental approach. It can't be just like he walks into class and the class is over. Goodbye. At the end of the year, you have nothing to do with them anymore. A true teacher, it's a relationship. It's not just a job. And in a sense, so we have genetic parents, and you have parents who have parents, I would say, who have a parental parents because of the approach that they use in inculcating, in teaching, and in bringing up the children. But when we talk, when there are some people who talk against adoption, chas v'shalom, they don't mean taking someone into the house and bringing him up. What they mean is that you shouldn't give the child the impression that you were the parent who gave birth. And this is a problem we find in schools today, in movements today, in yeshivas today. Sometimes, not chas v'shalom saying in every yeshiva, and I'm not trying to find fault with other things, but when teachers try, when Rosh Yeshivas try to replace parents, that's when we have problems. It's okay to have a parental approach. You should have a parental approach. And that's what Basia had. Basia had a parental approach. But it wasn't to replace the parents. Immediately, Vayigdal Moshe, as soon as Moshe becomes mature, Vayetzel Achav, he knew who his brothers were. In other words, being brought up in the palace of Paro, nevertheless, he knew, and obviously it was with Basha's understanding, who his genetic parents are, and doing that, she was able to have a parental approach. Having a parental approach does not eliminate the possibility, of the child being aware that he was born to other parents. Besides the other shilas that sometimes take place as a result of not being aware who the genetic parents are. So this was Basia. Basia, in a sense, she took him into the palace, but she let him function and to live as a Jew and to know who the relationships he had was clearly, and to be to say by Hilo Leben he was a son, that could only be understood from the perspective that it was clearly under those circumstances, it was that she went through a form of conversion herself. So this is how I think that I want to say, but it's more than just that. The actual saving, when Basia opened up the basket, and she saw Moshe there, and her heart went out for Moshe, and she said, "He is from the Jewish children." How do we understand it? But I think the way we can understand it is with the Medrash Rabbah I mentioned just recently. Medrash Rabbah says, why we have a number of Shvatim, a Jew is called Yehudi. A Judah. He's identified with Yehuda. Why isn't he called Reuveni? Why isn't he identified with Reuven? Why isn't he identified with Shimon? Why is he only identified with Yehuda? He says, Ki avdecha arev es hanar, because your servant took responsibility. Yehuda said to Yosef, I took responsibility for Binyamin. It's my responsibility. I was a surety to Yaakov. So therefore, a Jew is called a Yehudi. A Jew is called a Yehudi. In other words, to be a Jew, a true Jew is one who assumes responsibility for another Jew. And here, immediately after, in telling us about her finding finding Moshe in the basket in the Nile River, says she said, because she said, my heart goes out to him, or the heart goes out to him because he's miyaldei ha'ivrim. What does that show? That shows the idea of responsibility. And in a sense, responsibility is more than rachmanus, more than gomel chasadim. When Avram Avinu, after his milah, after the bris, so we see what does Avram Avinu do? He sees three travelers in the desert. He gives them food, gives them a place to rest. That's Gmilas Chesed, that's showing kindness. He pleads on behalf of the people of Sdom. That shows Rachmanis, that shows mercy. And Besara, Ba'ohel, she's in the tent, that shows modesty. What's the idea? Why does all these three things happen immediately after the Bris Milah? But the Bris Milah is the conversion of Avraham Avinu. And it represents the physical sign of a Jew. But there are character signs of a Jew also. But what's interesting is, when it came to the character signs of a Jew, it didn't have to do with showing mercy to other Jews. On the contrary, the people of Sdom were the opposite of Jews. But nevertheless, he pleaded on their behalf to God. So when it comes to character traits, very often the character traits are not limited to what you do for a Jew. It's for every human being. But here, it wasn't just a question of character traits. Here she assumed responsibility. To a certain degree, she put her life on the line. She was the daughter of Paro. And she, so it was a sense of responsibility. That's the idea. That's what the Medrash says. What a Jew is a Jew, halachic, my father would always say when he would quote this Medrash. A Jew is a Jew because he was either born from a Jewish mother or because he underwent halachic conversion, he's a Jew. But what is a Jew? A Jew is somebody who has responsibility for his brother, for the other Jew. So immediately, in talking us about her going down to the Yor, it shows her sense, not just of mercy, but her sense of responsibility. That's an indication that she herself became Jewish. Now, I think but there is a question that we still have to understand. And that question is, we know that when one undergoes conversion, they have to undergo conversion in front of a Beis Din of three. And it was obvious that when Basha went through conversion here, there were no three Jews to form a Besdin. So how did they undergo conversion? And this type of question could be asked regarding many Medrashim. And I think I could answer the question, because it seems, without going into all the details, that even if we assume, as most do assume, that the patriarchs and the generations before the giving of the Torah were halachically considered Jewish, nevertheless, they underwent another conversion at the time of the giving of the Torah. Tosfos Kedusha, the way the Rishonim, the commentaries refer to it, an additional Kedusha, additional holiness. What was the nature of the earlier conversion, the lesser holiness, if I could use that terminology, as opposed to the additional holiness? But there are two forms. I once heard from my father, and it's written in some of my father's farim. There is Kedushas Yisrael, the sanctity of the Jew, of the individual as an individual. But there is sanctity in the Jew in being part of the Jewish nation. Until the giving of the Torah, there wasn't a national sanctity. It was individual sanctity. But only at the time of the giving of the Torah was there a national sanctity. And today, when somebody undergoes conversion, he's undergoing conversion for both. And under most situations, one is dependent upon the other. You can't go through conversion, we could suggest, just individual conversion or just being part of the Jewish nation, although I've seen people who suggest that. But you have to, you have to have individual identity as a Jew, and you have to be part of the nation of the Jewish people. But the nation of the Jewish people as a sanctified people, of a mamlechas kohanim v'goy kadosh. So that conversion took place at the time of the giving of the Torah. I would like to suggest that perhaps that until there was the national sanctity is what made the requirement of having a Besdin, in a sense, the Besdin acts on behalf of the Jewish people in accepting the ger as part of the Jewish nation. But at that time, there was no national sanctity yet. The sanctity was an individual sanctity. And the question is, why did there have to be a difference? Why is it that there was only an individual sanctity and not yet a national sanctity? And I think there are three reasons. There probably are more reasons for it. I think because the Jewish people are a nation that is identified by the Torah. Most nations are nations because of the country that they have. And it's because of this that when they go into exile for any extended period of time, they crumble as a nation. But the Jewish people can go into exile for 1,500, 1,600, 1,700 years. And they still remain as a nation because it's the Torah that gives them that status as a nation. So national sanctity was given to the Jewish people at the time of Matan Torah, at the time of the giving of the Torah. But I think there is a, and then also at that time, it seems, in Egypt, there were many different groups in Egypt at the time. If they had the, we should not identify our nationhood as having its origin in Egypt. But more important than that, I think, is when we view ourselves as a nation, we begin to not see ourselves as a family. And the Jewish people had a focus on being a family before they saw themselves as a nation. And I think, and especially in terms when we're in exile, the sense of nationhood, okay, now we have the state of Israel, so that's somewhat easier. But when you have one Jew in Egypt, one Jew in the United States, one Jew over there, what is our connection? Achenu Kobesh Yisrael Hametsuyim Batsara Vashibya. They're our brothers, because the Jewish people are not just a nation. They are a family. And to emphasize this point, they did not begin their nationhood right away, because they had to emphasize the idea of family, especially when they were outside the land of Israel. And I think that in a sense, the sense of nationhood that we have has to emanate the general familyhood, I should say, that we have as a people, has to emanate from the individual familyhood that we as Jews have. How were the Jews able to perpetuate their Jewish identity in Egypt? They were able to perpetuate it, and many of them were not so religiously inclined at that point, but it was the Jewish family. The Esbatenu Hitzil, God saved our houses, our families, our homes. And the Mialdos, the maidservants, Shifra and Pua, Yocheved and Miriam, who they were the leaders of the birth mothers, sorry, the women who were involved in helping the Jewish people give birth. And they were told by Paro to kill the Jewish children, kill the Jewish boys, the male sons. And they did not listen to Paro. And the Torah tells us when they feared God, by Yaslahem Batim, houses or homes were made for them. And there's all kinds of drushes on it. But I think, Yaslahem Batim. So some say that was a reward that was made for the women who helped the Jewish women who helped the other Jewish women give birth. So they were helped by they were rewarded for their service, and in not listening to Paro, by having special families, being Kohanim, families of Kohanim, Leviim, and the houses of Malchus, they are the ancestors of the royal family of the Jewish people. But I think that we couldn't. But it's a little problematic. The drush is certainly true, but the simple reading is by Yaslahem Batim. If it had been something done just for them, if that had been the only explanation, it should say Bayas Lahen in the feminine form, Batim. I think Bayas Lahen Batim, when the Jewish people did their part, when the Jewish women did their part, and they feared God, and they didn't listen to Paro, and they kept the Jewish children alive. God made families for these Jewish children. just keeping someone alive would not have been successful in perpetuating the continuation of the Jewish people in Egypt. But God made for them families, made it possible for these Jewish children to continue as part of families. And that's why the Jewish people were able to continue, to continue and to leave Egypt and to receive the Torah. So, and it's the sense of the individual family that gives us the perspective, if I can use the word, of national family. And I think this was the idea. This is the idea of, we have, when we say she took him as a son, even though he had genetic children, genetic parents, and he probably continued to have a relationship with Yocheved and maybe with Amram. But the idea of being a son, what's the idea of being a son? No, it's the idea is we see every Jew as being a relative of ours. And this is the idea also when someone is a teacher. So when he's a teacher of a student, he in a certain sense, in a limited sense. When I say a limited sense, I mean not to push aside the biological parent, the true parent, but he also becomes a form of a parent, because that's the nature of the Jewish people. The Jewish people are not just a nation. The Jewish people are a family. Had we started as a group, as a nation, as and I mentioned this before, as Esav did. Esav started his nation right away. So the family feeling would have crumbled. We had to go through hardship and outside our land as a family before we became a nation. And this way, the Jewish nation will be not just a nation, but there will be a family as well. Okay.
Thank you. If anyone has a question, please put it in the chat. We have one question.
About Iksuba.
Okay.
So as far as the question of Iksuba is concerned, now, in regular contracts, especially if you're identified with, I'm not talking where somebody was in somebody's house for 2 years, but if somebody was brought up by somebody, so in a contract, they could use the adopting parent's name that's brought down. That's the person who he's identified with by the general public. That goes without saying. But in the Ksuba, there's an additional problem. The additional problem is because sometimes Ksuvas are used to determine yichus, to determine who can marry who. Now, obviously, if you would write the adopting parents, that purpose, the ksuva would never be able to serve that purpose. So, but there, to be honest, there, I once discussed this question with Rev Gedalia Schwartz, Zatzal, and he mentioned to me that. That there is a machlokis among the poskim. Some say that on Iksuva you could actually write the adopting parent's name. But he himself favored, I think he said it was the Shita, I don't remember who Shita it was, but the Shita of some poskim, that you can write the adopting parent's name, but you should put the words Hamigadla afterwards, who raises it. This way, if a question arises, so you'll know that this was an adopting parent, not the natural parent. But that has to do only with Iksuva. It doesn't have to do with other contracts.
Someone else said, if we're both a family and a nation, can we say, when we say Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu is the family relationship and Malkeinu is like the national relationship?
That's 100% true. And I mentioned, because the Medrash says that the way they were around the Aron of Yaakov, the coffin of Yaakov, that's the way they camped around and traveled around the Mishkan. What's the idea? The idea is a family usually breaks up when the patriarch or matriarch of the family dies. They become a tribe, whatever they become. But the strings that held them together become loosened. And because God wanted the Jewish people to remain as a family, so where did they camp? They camped around the Mishkan, which represented the presence of God. In a sense, the presence of God, God is Avinu, he's our father, he's the head of the family. But more than that, they had flags in each of the four sides of the camp of the Jewish people in the desert. And one flag had Aleph Yud Yud on it. The second flag had Yud, had Vez, Sadik, Vez, Sadik, Ayin. Basically, when you put all the flags together, you had Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov. So the idea is, when a family stays together, the ancestors are still alive. When a family crumbles, the ancestors are no longer alive. And in a sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately is the ultimate Avinu Malkeinu. So he is our father. He is our father. And he is the one that keeps our family alive. And by keeping our family alive, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov stay alive also.
This was not exactly what someone asked, but should we still take this lesson that the Jewish family is much more important to Judaism than Jewish education in day schools?
One has to be an aid to the other. One teacher once complained to me that he suggested to the parents that they study with their children. So the parents said, that's what you're being paid for, not me. And obviously, there are certain limitations with some parents, what they could do. But the devotion that they show the child should be done in such a way that it'll help the children in school. But that's doubly true in terms of the school. The school has to help the children with the home also. They have to see this. Parents and schools have to see themselves as partners. You know, which is more important, which is less important? Obviously, it will depend on the situation. And I think probably the home is more important. But if you're trying to bring them, and depending on the society that you're in, if the family cannot, originally, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that if somebody had a father who could teach him Torah, so the father taught him Torah, but it got to a situation where those who didn't have fathers that were able to teach them Torah, they weren't able to learn Torah. So a system of schooling was introduced. So schools become necessary because of the situation. And they have to recognize, and to the degree where one is necessary as opposed to the other varies from situation to situation. Yeshua ben Gamla introduced this type of education, a schooling situation.
Okay, that's it. Thank you. So for those who just joined recently, this week we had changed the time to start 1 hour earlier than usual, but next week we'll be back to our, God willing, our 11 o'clock start. So for anyone who missed the share, you'll be able to see it on YouTube. It should be up in about 20 minutes. And also, hopefully starting this week, the audio will also be on YU Torah. That is a new feature. Hopefully I'll be figure that out, how to upload it correctly. So thank you all for being here, and have a good week. And again, next week, back to regular time, 11 o'clock Chicago time.
Are they? But those who missed the share could view it on the
It should be on YouTube in about 20 minutes. I'm gonna post it now.
Okay, very good. Okay.